Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer on this November 18th, Monday, Dax McCarty. It's a very special interview with the Atlanta United midfielder, an MLS legend nearing, but not at, the end of his career after the biggest upset in the history of this league sent the five stripes on and knocked Inter Miami and Lionel Messi out of the Audi MLS Cup playoffs. I'll chat with Dax about that experience, about the season overall, and his career, including what it's like to wrap it all up with his young family in tow. Should be a great conversation. In the meantime, get ready for our previews on Thursday of the conference semifinals. Two matches on Saturday, two matches on Sunday. Matt Doyle and I'll break it all down later on this week in detail. But in the meantime, here's Dax. Enjoy, everyone. Oh, it's our absolute pleasure on Extra Time to welcome the man, the myth, the legend, Dax McCarty. Yes, competition on the podcasting space, Dax, but we'll allow it, all right? You're just trying to finish this career out in style, okay?
I'm no competition for you guys. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's a filthy, filthy lie. Biggest upset in MLS history, man. Do you subscribe to that? Does that sound right to you, Atlanta over Miami?
That's what people keep saying. I subscribe to it up to a certain point. I think that outside of our locker room, it would have been foolish for anyone to look at the two seasons that both teams had and pick Atlanta United to win. So from that standpoint, I totally get it. Miami sets the points record. They've got the greatest player that's ever lived, along with his buddies who have won multiple Champions Leagues, multiple La Ligas, couple other World Cup winners in there. So look, I get the narrative, but honestly, when I tell you that inside our locker room, we really were like quietly confident that we were going to win this series. We were like, I'm not saying that to like make a clickbaity like headline or clickbaity like little audio clip. Like I really truly like we looked at our regular season performance against them and we knew that we could go and beat them. So it feels good. And obviously, if people want to describe it as the massive upset that a lot of people think it is, then that's fine with us.
Hey, sample size is important. So if you're taking that bigger sample size, yeah, biggest upset. If you're just looking at the Atlanta United versus Inter Miami sample size, well, then that's a little bit of a different a sample to look at. We'll talk about so many things in this conversation. Let's do start with the soccer, though. Take me inside that locker room on decision day. Because we're talking about like multiple steps down the line. But on decision day, if you were looking at the odds of Atlanta United even being in the playoffs was very low. So this journey started far before you ever saw Inter Miami on the field.
Well, my journey was definitely unique considering I thought it was going to be the last game I ever played in. And that's not to say like I didn't think we weren't going to win the game. Because you always have that belief and you always believe going into every game, you're going to win it. It was more to say there's so much has to go right for us on decision day that the chances of us making it are pretty low. So let me be a realist. I am a realist. And let me just figure out a way to process my emotions of going through my last game of my career that I'll ever play. 50 friends and family down there in Orlando in the stands, Adidas was amazing. They sent me like a special pair of boots with my kids' names on them. And look, I'm not like the special boot kind of guy, you know, it's just not the type of player I am, but like, you know, seeing my kids' names on boots and like realizing that this will probably be the only time I ever wear them. There was just a lot of stuff going through my head. And to be honest, we didn't even know when I was on the field and they were doing the whole VAR thing, taking their goal away. And when we were defending the lead, no one on our bench knew what was happening because Rob Valentino didn't want anyone to like look at the other scores. He just wanted to like very much focus on the present moment, which a lot of people say that and then don't practice that. Well, he actually practiced that. And so when they blew the final whistle, I looked at our bench and everyone was going crazy. And I literally could not, I was like, you're telling me we made it. Everything went our way for us to make it. They were like, bam, bam, bam. So then it's like going nuts. Like we actually made the playoffs. This is incredible.
You have to now be, I don't know where you've stood before, but video review has to be near and dear to your old grizzled veteran heart, huh?
I've always thought that VAR is the right way to kind of manage moments in the game, big moments in the game. It's not always, I think, applied properly. But by and large, if you were to look at it as a whole, it's been overwhelmingly positive, because the truth is you want big decisions to get right. And in that moment when they scored, you know, I was talking with Duncan McGuire kind of by the halfway line, and I was like, it hit your arm. And he's like, he was kind of playing dumb. And
but he knows.
Like, yeah. He was like, well, he was like his natural position. Like he's like, it deflected, and all these different factors have to come into it, and no way they can call this off. And I'm like, listen, the only way I interpret the rule, which as it is written, is it doesn't matter how the ball hits your hand. If it leads to a goal, if like the next touch or two is a goal, they have to call it back. And so I knew that in my head, and I was thinking, as soon as they went to the monitor, I was like, this has to go in our favor. And so look, we have in Atlanta been on the wrong end of a call like that a few times this year. So to have it go our way felt pretty good.
Oh boy, you're coming after my instant replay job as well. I just got to protect, get my elbows out here, protect some position. Let's dive into what you talked about in terms of just believing in yourselves. FEA has been this rallying cry.
What does that stand for?
You'll have to tell me. Maybe we'll have to get Rob Valentino on this podcast to do it. Google is everyone's friend. I mean, just make sure that you're doing it not on like a school computer or your work computer might be fine. TBD. Sure. Where did this come from? And it feels to me like Rob Valentino is the perfect person to deliver that particular message, just on persona, on looks, on he's got like a WWE vibe going to him.
Absolutely. Yeah, Rob's great. He's got all these little motivational idioms that he pulls out every now and then. And, you know, Rob, you know what I really appreciate about Rob is that he's 100% authentic, and he's extremely self-aware, and he doesn't pretend to be anyone but himself. And he's got some pillars that he relies on for how he goes about his business and how he coaches. And he practices what he preaches. And look, he's been fantastic for us. And look, we haven't always gotten the best results, even when they made the change. Our season has been so up and down, so inconsistent. But the one thing I have to give him credit for is that even when we got pretty poor results, when he was at the helm, and it seemed like the playoffs weren't in like going to happen for us, he kept saying, guys, I know you don't believe me, and it might not feel like it, but I believe we are a good team. Like, things will go our way. We just have to keep at it, keep pounding the rock, kind of, you know. And it was one of those things where you just couldn't help but believe him. And so when he does all these motivational speeches before the game, sometimes he'll throw out like little quotes here and there. And I can't remember exactly what game it was before, but look, he gave it. It's a Tom Brady quote, right? And it's a Tom Brady quote from one of like his viral moments as a leader and as an inspirational kind of figure. And you know, how are you going to go against Tom Brady? The guy's got infinite amount of championship rings, and he's one of the best winners of all time. And if he says FEA to the people that don't matter, then why wouldn't we subscribe to that motto in Atlanta? Like, let's just believe in ourselves in the locker room and see what happens.
Tom Brady's the GOAT, Dax. Lionel Messi's the GOAT. Take me into the preparations ahead of this series against Miami. How did you guys do it? What was the plan? And did you execute as close as you could to that plan, or did some things just sort of vibe right in the moment?
Everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah, 100%.
And that first game, we got punched in the face. I think it was like 3 minutes into the game. And so when Suarez scored in that first game, I know exactly where everyone's going with this. Miami's going to beat them 6-0, and the second game is going to be a formality, and they're going to win in Atlanta no matter. Like, and listen, I got to be honest, it was a little tedious. That it was kind of scary there for a minute, because that first game, without the help of you-know-who, Mr. Brad Guzan, I mean, the game is going to be out of reach within 20 minutes, right? And so we're kind of hanging on for dear life, and we had a plan. It didn't work. Two of our big defensive players go down in the first 20 minutes of the game, Brooks Lennon with a season-ending injury, and Steon Gregerson just from three games in 6 days or whatever it was. So, look, we had to adjust. We were in a four, four-one-one, whatever. And so once the injuries happened, it was almost Rob's hand was forced. We go into a back five. We get more secure. Saba gets the goal. And look, we didn't even deserve to get anything out of that first game. But I think that that performance and the guts that we showed, it kind of set the stage for then the last two games, because we knew it was going to be a big task going into Miami and trying to get anything out of that first game. But with the rest, with the way that we had played them before down in Miami in a back five, that was kind of the blueprint to go forward. And so I'll try to keep it brief. When you play against them, they are almost unstoppable. And I mean that in a way of like, it doesn't matter how well you play. They are going to do what they want to do. It's just a matter of, can you limit that in some capacity? So like Leo Messi gets on the ball, he's going to turn, he's going to find a midfielder and get it back, and he's going to find Jordi Alba running in behind. And if you cover that, you open yourself up and he will find a pass for a striker or for Diego Gomez. So what do? You stay compact. When the ball gets to Jordi Alba, you just watch the cutback ball. And that's kind of like where I came in, is like, I use my experience to be like, okay, if Campana or Gressel or Gomez or Kramaski, if they hurt us and if they score, fine. Don't let the literal centerpiece of MLS and the centerpiece of soccer for the last 20 years beat you. Like, easier said than done. But in my head, like, if you watch certain moments of games 2 and 3, I literally let Redondo just have the ball, and he's 30 yards out from goal, and I shade towards Messi so he cannot find him. I mean, that's just in my head how I had to think about it, right? And so it's a little bit tactical. It's a little bit lucky that they didn't finish very well. And it's, of course, riding a hot keeper in Brad Guzan. I mean, that's kind of the recipe we stuck with, and it worked.
I've enjoyed your enjoyment of Brad Guzan's net moment. It just had everything. It was like Shakespearean for me, like all the different characters, the facial expressions, Suarez's desire to trash talk him in the moment as he's flailing. And I've compared him to a tuna being stuck in a net and a trawler dragging him through. After a moment like this happens, what sort of life does that live in a locker room? Because that feels to me like locker room gold.
It was just incredible. Honestly, I talked about this a little bit on our pod, but I stayed the night. I didn't fly back with the team because I had my family there and I wanted to help get the kids back. As you know, father of kids, young kids, it's very difficult traveling with them on air travel.
Hey, so you don't leave the wife with that.
Correct. I was being the good dad, and you know, we flew back together, and I couldn't sleep because I was in the hotel room. We had one bed for all four of us, and it was a nightmare. I was up till 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. And I was just hoping, I was refreshing Twitter. Please, someone throw a new meme in there. Like, every time I saw the video, I had a tear in my eye from laughter. And you know, when you're trying to laugh really, when you laugh really hard, but you got to be quiet because the kids are sleeping.
You're just shaking.
Oh, I was just giggling like a schoolgirl. It was just the best. And like, of course the memes get thrown around the locker room. You know, I thought of the Wedding Crashers scene. I was just thinking like, big tree fall hard, right? There's just something that resonated with me about that scene and that movie and what was going on with Brad. The tuna flailing in the net, I also see the vision and I like it. It was gold. And Brad, look, he's great. He's such a good sport about it. And if you hear him describe it, the reason why it makes it so funny is because, you know, in that moment, he is so mad. He's about 100%. To have a heart attack or a brain aneurysm or something. And because he just wants to go, he just wants to get out of the net and give Suarez the business, and he can't move. It's just classic. I'll never forget that.
It's almost like a reverse mime. You know, the mime goes forward, but Brad's going backwards. He's grabbing, he's flailing. It's perfect. And it's also real sicko heritage, Dax, that Brad was on. Dax McCarty, Rob Valentino, in this particular Atlanta United group knocked out Messi and friends. Like, yeah. this is MLS, yeah. MLS lore.
Well, I haven't shared this, but I'll share this, and I'm going to give a shout out to another MLS heritage guy, in Kai Kamara. And you just, these are the type, you of course, if you win a big series like this, you know, you're going to be talked about in a more positive light. And the truth is that we haven't been talked about as a team in anything but a relatively negative light this whole year. And you know what? Probably deserved. So I'm not complaining about that. But, you know, when now everyone, you know, they want to praise you for the performance and all that, it's great. You kind of block it out. But when your peers notice different things, you appreciate it more. So Kai, you know, he sends me a message and it's a voice note. And he's basically just walking through like step by step. Hey, man, like I just want you to know, like, first of all, like, congrats on winning the series. And second of all, like, everyone will probably talk about, right, like, the pass that led to the second goal or whatever. And, like, of course, it's a great pass. But the thing that I noticed is just how you saw what Messi and Jordi Alba are trying to accomplish, and you just took that massive part of their game plan away. And it wasn't just me, right? It was all our midfielders. It was our center backs doing their jobs. And so, like, hearing that from a peer who might see the game in a little bit of a different way than maybe the casual fan, you know, that type of stuff is the stuff that I really appreciate. And that's the type of stuff that'll resonate with me long after this season's over, right? It's just your friends, your peers, the people who have been doing it a long time who also acknowledge and notice, like, maybe the little things that other people wouldn't notice, right? So, you know, I appreciate that. Obviously, it was a fun series. But yeah, I'll always appreciate that from my fellow journeyman, Mr. Kai Kamara.
Well, the old heads loved it. All the guys that have been through the different trials and tribulations of MLS over the years. And I want to get to that with you in a little bit, because you were here when Beckham arrived and now you're here with Messi. So there's an interesting perspective to be had. I saw the Jordan Belfort Wolf of Wall Street gift that you put out. And let's push it forward, because we have a big match against Orlando coming up here. But, like, it's not over. No, it's not over for Dax McCarty. It's not over for Atlanta United. And to do it again against Orlando, when that's where you were born and raised, yeah. I mean, this has to feel like a poetic, hopefully not the end, but, you know, like, the proximity of the end is here, obviously.
When I went into my meeting with Garth Lagerwey, and when I had made the decision to retire, and I told some family, I had told Brad Guzan, and I had my meeting with Garth, and I said, look, these are the reasons why I feel like it's the right time to walk away. You know, I don't want it to be a distraction in the locker room. I want your blessing. How do you think I should go about it? And, you know, we just had a really nice, honest, candid conversation. And I said, look, if there's one thing that maybe can come out of this, and this is when we weren't in a good way, you know, we weren't, maybe selfishly, this can potentially help galvanize, like, give the locker room something to rally around, right? And that's just maybe a hope and a prayer, but, like, it didn't work. We continued to, like, get stuck in the mud. And so, you know, I'm not a negative person. I like to think of myself as a glass half full type of guy. But once you see where the season's heading, you're almost like, it just doesn't look like it's going to end how I want it to end. You know, I wanted it to end challenging for trophies, winning games, contributing on the field. And it just didn't look like it was heading in that direction. And now you fast forward to now, you said poetic. Someone else said fairy tale. Someone else has described it as almost like magical, right? And it is like a little bit of magical run right now. I mean, Disney, isn't that where dreams come true? Like, you know, whatever happened down there in Orlando on the last game of the season, we've just kind of been riding that wave. And, like, the fact that I hadn't played that much this year, and now, you know, I played in Montreal, I scored my penalty, started every game against Miami. We got through the GOAT, and now we go back to Orlando. It feels great, man. And that's why these careers, like professional careers and you know, what I'm experiencing right now, it's such a roller coaster of emotions, because you can't write the script before it's done. You just can't. And so, you know, in my head, maybe I had written that script a little bit, and I was already starting to feel a little sorry for myself, saying, you know, great career, Dax. It's going to end with a sputter. No, stay positive. Keep the outlook. Keep a little perspective, because truly, you never know how it can end. And honestly, I'm just riding that wave. I hope I have three more games left, but I don't want to look that far ahead. We look at Orlando. We know how good of a team they are. We know how big of a challenge that's going to be, and I'm just going to enjoy it.
Sunday, Orlando, Atlanta, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, pregame show before MLS Countdown, tune in. I mean, these are the moments. Conference final at stake, and then, of course, MLS Cup, if you can get past that one. What is Saba time, Dax? Like, if we actually had to define Saba time within the locker room, I don't know that it runs like normal time, because normal time is predictable. You know exactly what's going to, like, it's tick-tock, tick-tock. This is what happens. This is what time it is. Saba time feels like a... it's less predictable.
Saba time is like Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar, where he's caught behind the bookshelf and he's like, where am I? But in reality, he's saving the world. And Saba's just the best, you know, and he's all that is good with our team. And Saba time usually means it's winning time, because when Saba plays well and when Saba scores, you know, we usually win and we usually do well. And so that's the analogy I see for Saba time right now. But what a guy, what a tremendous guy and a tremendous player. And the fact that he's a Georgian from the country, Georgia, playing in Georgia, and he's a fan favorite, and he's a super genuinely nice, humble guy. It's just, he's a wonderful teammate.
Tell me about the midfield matchup against Orlando, and then I'll take you big picture on some other fun stuff. But, like, you know, Araujo and Cartagena are two of the very best, and you know intimately what Oscar Pareja teams are about.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a challenge. Look, I look at the Miami series and the way we approached that, and we're going to have to approach it again differently against Orlando. You know, we knew against Miami we were going to be able to build out of the midfield and have more time and space because of, you know, the lack of defensive responsibility that Suarez and Messi have because of what they do on the attacking side. And so Orlando doesn't play like that. They are extremely well-versed in how they press. Their front four is very compact and they all work for each other. And then, like you said, those two midfielders are tireless. They're relentless. And it's almost like putting two pit bulls in the midfield, and both of them are technically proficient. Both of them are good players. They share the responsibility of going forward and defending. And, you know, when one steps out, the other covers them. And so they have a really good understanding between themselves. And so the series is going to look the game is going to look a lot differently. And I know Oscar will have them ready. He's one of the best coaches in the league. Orlando, their fans always bring it. Orlando is always a pain in the butt to go down and play there, man. Their fans are excellent. So look, we're under no illusions. We've been prepping for what it's going to look like. And I'm excited to see how we approach this game tactically. We haven't gone through it in detail yet, but we'll create some problems for them. They'll create some problems for us. They're a really well-balanced side. I'm excited. It's going to be a really fun game.
A plan for one thing, I mean, and that's to move on to get to MLS Cup. The favorites in the East are kaput. Adios. They're out. It's an interesting debate, MLS Cup versus Supporters Shield. And I'm sitting in the studio with some guys that have won some shields. And I sometimes just can't help but look at them a little bit incredulously and be like, guys, I love the shield. I am as in love with the shield as someone can be, but it is not MLS Cup. I wonder where your mind is at, because I think of you and of Oscar and of all these people chasing this prize, this is your last chance.
Yeah, it is. My buddy Sash, look, I'll ride with him forever because I think he's right on most things. On this one, I would have agreed with him if his argument was made like 5-6 years ago. And I say that because I don't know if you saw it, but I had a tweet when all this stuff was going out that the Shield in general, because the schedule isn't fully balanced, of course you're always going to have the argument of like, well, it's not a fully balanced schedule, so the Shield, it can't be above MLS Cup. But I always thought the best team in MLS won the Shield. I think that's a legitimate argument. There's no gripe with that. The problem now is that not only is the schedule unbalanced, but you don't even play every team in the league at least once. At least before 2020, you played every team in the league one time. And look, maybe one year you played the Galaxy in LA, and then the next year with Red Bull, we played them in New York. Okay, so it wasn't fully balanced, but you still played them. And so you could still hang your hat on the fact that you had played every team in the league. You ended up with the most points. That had a lot of value. And I really valued the Supporter Shield. I'm a big truther. When you don't play every team in the league, it's hard to have that argument. And even then, if you ask me, I said this, if you ask me, would I trade in a shield for an MLS Cup? Of course I would, because you get a ring with a cup. That's just a fact. And it's a totally different tournament. The best teams don't always win MLS Cup, and that's what makes it unique. But it gets you a ring, it gets you in the rafters, it gets you a banner, it gets your name in the lore of all-time MLS greats. That's just the reality that we live in. Now, I'm still proud of the Shields. I still feel strongly that the Supporter Shield is very important. But when you don't play every team in the league, it's just so hard to make the argument that it's more valuable than MLS Cup. You just can't do it.
Who's the favorite right now in your mind? Like just taking your emotional and personal stakes out of it. If you were imagining yourself to be a media member ahead of time,
I've got to say I feel like the LA Galaxy have been very impressive all season. I've always been very impressed with Greg Vanney teams for the most part. We ran into them a ton with Toronto FC and with Red Bull and Chicago and all these. So I knew he would get it right eventually. It's been a rough few years in LA. But if I look at it objectively, look, LA, they've got a really good team and they're really well balanced. And they were leaking goals earlier in the year. They've tightened it up a little bit in the back. And they've got, in my opinion, one of the top three best players still left in the playoff and Ricky Pooj, who he's just a really tough guy to deal with. He makes things happen. And
you like the Ricky vibe, or are you an annoyed by the Ricky vibe guy?
I'm annoyed when I play against him. And just generally speaking, his mannerisms, they get on my nerves a little
bit.
Yeah,
they inspire a little bit of that, yeah.
You can't deny his value, and you can't deny what he brings to that team. And then even when you mention him, you look at, like, Paintsil and Peck and Jovalich, and you're like, all right, take out Messi, Suarez, and their 40 goals, 45 goals, whatever they scored. That's probably the best attack in the league. If you were looking at it, like, really objectively, like an analyst, you're thinking they've got a lot of different ways to hurt you, a lot of different guys that you have to stop. And so they've got home field advantage throughout the rest of the, or LAFC does, but, you know, LA Galaxy.
Yeah, it's still in LA, Dex. It's
still in LA. But the Galaxy, for me, I think Vegas, probably smart money would be on them being the favorites, and I would probably have to agree with it.
So I love that you brought up the Galaxy, and I want to bring us back to that Beckham point, because you joined MLS in 2006 and Beckham came later. So I'm not calling you old, but the fact of the matter is that you were here when Beckham arrived and Messi arrived.
Grizzled.
Can you compare and contrast the league at those two different moments in time when those two guys entered, and how you see their particular impacts on Major League Soccer?
Yeah, they're a little bit different, but they're very similar in a lot of ways. Beckham helped usher in a totally new era in MLS. And the way I see it, you know, 18, 19 years later, whatever it is, I think Messi's doing the exact same. And so the differences are obviously the quality of play. The league has gotten better, in my opinion, since Beckham has been here. You know, Beckham, the big difference for me is that Beckham helped usher in this era of, like, the DPs, right? And so let's go shoot for the stars and try to sign one or two huge names that are probably a little bit older, and let's, you know, sell out stadiums that way. And it wasn't top to bottom quality of roster. Now with Messi, I look at a player like Diego Gomez, right? I look at a guy like Kramaski, and I think the only reason they came to MLS was to play with Messi, and because they see a tremendous opportunity to be able to not only play with an idol, but also to develop and to be sold for big money and go play elsewhere. Right. And so, look, it's happened in the past. Of course, MLS has developed great players like Almiron and these guys who have been sold and developed. But for me, there's such a bigger emphasis now on signing younger, proven quality designated players in their primes, because that's what you need to do to compete. Back in the day when Beckham was in the league, you could compete with one or two aging superstars in a roster of, for by and large, a lot of college kids like that. You could compete that way. You wouldn't win usually, but you could compete. Now you can't compete that way. The way you build rosters, it's so different. You have to get it right with your veterans. You have to get it right with your superstars. You have to get it right with your middle, the core of your roster, and you have to get it right with your young players, or else you're not going to have a chance. So that for me is a big difference. I think the spotlight with the Apple deal, of course, you can always, Messi probably takes us more international, more global. You know, but Beckham, the things that he did, man, you just can't recreate some of that magic that Beckham brought to the league. Right. And so I look at Beckham as bringing a media frenzy in a different way, because he actually did interviews. He was like a media darling, and he promoted the league in a lot of good ways. And so Messi's the total opposite of that. He does not do media. He lets all his play on the field do the talking. And so, you know, you kind of struggle to understand where he's at with where MLS is and where maybe his feelings are. So a little bit of differences.
I think one of the things I think about with Beckham is, like, sort of a professionalization of Major League Soccer in the sense of resources. dumped in, and not just on the player side of like, hey, we can sign these big guys.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of like the training facilities that players enjoy now, some
the
of
infrastructure,
the basic perks, the organization that goes around it, that he was sort of just like, yo, this has to happen.
Nowadays,
and then that growth comes. Now that's a
nowadays,
given, right?
Like, nowadays, if you don't have a world-class training facility in MLS, a big top player is probably not going to sign with you. That was not the case with Beckham. Beckham came, right? It was called the Home Depot Center. I don't know if it still is. Maybe it still is. I don't know.
No. Dignity Health Sports Park.
Yeah, but you know, it's a center, you know, it's got a lot of fields, right? So for me, there were maybe two dedicated training facilities. There was one in Frisco, Pizza Hut Park, as you can recall, which had a dedicated, you know, training field, 18, 19 fields. Not a lot of places had their own training facilities where the owners were spending $50 million to be like, listen, this is where we're going to train. This is where we're going to spend 90% of our time. That change in and of itself was huge for MLS because that is where you spend majority of your time. Yes, stadiums are important. No one's going to deny that. But that's mainly for the ownership and for the fans. And that's where obviously game day occurs. But for the players, you spend 95% of your time on the training field. And
that's the craft.
You want it at a top level. And so now, if you don't have a top training facility, you don't have a chance to sign the best players. So that's a huge difference.
I'm thinking about like all these experiences that you had and now the opportunity to share this final experience with your kids. How is that going? Just is a family affair here, like this build up to games, the possibility of it all being over. How do they grasp that? How do you communicate that to them? Yeah. How have you experienced this as a family?
Well, it's emotional for mom and dad. It's not emotional for them at all because they have no clue what's going on. They don't care. My oldest is a very, very funny kid. And so, you know, he knows like, hey, in this home game, you get to do the walkout with dad. Great. Well, the other kids are a little bit older and they all know who Suarez and Jordi Alba and Messi and Busquets are. And my 5-year-old has no clue. Right. He kind of starting to realize it a little bit. But when they're high fiving everyone and my wife's taking a video and he's karate chopping Messi's hand and kind of almost leaving the goat hanging for a little bit, like they just don't get it. You know, those moments, and it'll resonate with them later what he did, which is hilarious. But they don't know any better. Right. They just think, hey, I get to go out on this field in front of all these people with my dad, and then he's going to kick the soccer ball a little bit, and then I'll go. I want to play on the field afterwards. So that's cool for them. But for me, it's like, you guys don't understand. This will end very soon. Like, appreciate it, you know? And I almost feel guilty because my 2-year-old, you know, my 5-year-old, he likes it. My 2-year-old loves it. Loves it. Obsessed. He is obsessed with the game. And it's a little bittersweet because I know if I just could hang on a little bit longer and if I played another year or two, it would, that bug would just be ingrained in him forever. And maybe it is now, I don't know, but he loves it so much. He sits there for two, you know how it is, how hard it is for kids to keep their attention. He'll sit on my wife's lap and he'll just watch the game. And he'll just, and it's like a 2-year-old doing that is almost unheard of. So it's been really special. I think it's been a little, you know, a little up and down for my wife. Cause I'm sitting there like, hey, listen, we might have these dates available. Might want to plan a little family vacay. And it's like, well, good thing we didn't spend any money on any flights, right? Like, or else we would have had to cancel it. You know, so we're just kind of enjoying every moment, taking it as it comes. She's as happy as anyone for me, but I think she's as surprised as well because she knew how difficult this year was and she knew how frustrated I was at times during the season. And you're wrestling with this dichotomy of, well, I want you to win and I want you to go out on top, but you know, it's been a hard season and you haven't been happy all the time. And I want you to be happy again and, you know, maybe look towards the next phase of your life. So balancing that, it's been a challenge, but man, I mean, I wouldn't want it any other way. That's just the life we sign up for.
What are the most important things to you in the next phase of your life? What are the sort of core principles that you're thinking about and organizing decisions around?
Giving back to the game. It's something that obviously it's very important to me. Just because I'm so grateful to what the sport has given me in my life, things that I never thought would happen, opportunities, people that I've met, players that I've played with, just kind of indescribable. But I also want to stay a part of the game. I want to leave a legacy in the game. And it's weird because, you know, all this hoopla around like the Mike Tyson, Jake Paul fight. And the one thing I took from it was like Mike Tyson being interviewed and just kind of being a curmudgeon. And when a little girl asked him about his legacy, he was like, legacy, who cares about legacy? I'm going to be dead soon. Doesn't matter. And I'm like, okay, it's funny. Like, sure. Whatever. I guess that's, you can have that opinion. Well, I have the opposite opinion. I think every person on the planet leaves a legacy, whether they want to leave a legacy or not. That's not up for debate. You do. Your legacy is the memories that you leave behind, the effect you have on people, the effect you have on kids, the effect you have on your industry, where, whether you're a doctor or a lawyer or an athlete or a garbage man, doesn't matter. You leave a legacy by how you treat people, how you carry yourself, you know, the charitable things that you do, whatever it is, you will leave a legacy. And so I do think about that. I think about legacy, and part of an athlete's legacy will be on-field contribution, no question about it. Okay, I'm very proud of that legacy. Hopefully still more to be written. But then the off-field legacy is also something that I want to leave and maybe do better at than I have as a player, because there are so many people in this sport and in this game that do things just for the love of the game, and they don't make the money that the athletes make. They don't get the recognition that the athletes get. And they deserve every bit of praise. And so if I can somehow lift those people up and make sure that they know that they're valued and cared about, while also staying engaged and involved in the game, then that's what I'm going to try to do.
I always think about it in terms of sort of a tapestry, at least for our game in the U.S. And you come from a lot of different perspectives and had a lot of different roles, and every thread matters. And that goes for every level. Are you going to coach your kids? Like, speaking of certain legacies to leave, you think you got that in you?
I probably will end up coaching them at some point. Although I will say it would be very difficult for me, because I can already feel the blood boiling when, you know, I see something wrong and I'm like trying to be gentle about, hey, don't do this or don't do that, or hey, do it this way. And they're like, dad, like, you're my dad, leave me alone. I don't care about
you. Yeah.
Right. And so I will try to help them. I think it would be better if someone else was the main contributor of coaching them as they grow up, but I'll be there every step of the way for sure. And you know what, listen, I gotta be honest, if both of them say, dad, when they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, I have zero interest in playing soccer, I want to do something else, I'll be like, awesome. Awesome. I can't imagine how hard it would be, not even to say I'm this really big deal, but just your dad played for 19 years, right? Like, are you try to follow in their footsteps? I mean, I look at Bronny and I'm like, God, how is that kid ever going to like have success? Like, what does success look like for him? Right. And so I almost look at it like, hey, if my kids play, awesome, I will try to help them be the best they can be. If they don't, great. They don't have to worry about any of that. They don't have to try to impress anyone. They can just go and live their own lives and make their own legacies and do their own thing, right? And so I look at it kind of both ways, and whatever they decide to do, I'll support.
All right, let's rapid fire and get you out of here. I know you have an MLS Journeyman pod. Best MLS Journeyman guest of all time is?
Kai Kamara.
Oh, who's the one person you would want to get in that show now? If you could choose any person in Major League Soccer's extended Marvel universe, so to speak.
Well, the very, very easy answer is Messi. That would be obviously the coup of the century, which means it won't happen, obviously. More realistic answer, I would say, I'm trying to think here. I'm trying to give a shout out to an old head who's been around as long as I have, but we're few and far between these days. Listen, that's a tough one, because there's not many journeymen that have been through the mud like us, like me, Gargs, and Gordo. We've already had Nagby on, and he's a king, he's a legend. So that
I'm gonna throw one out that I think could be a fun one.
Sure.
That might not be Fafa Picot could be fun, I think.
Fafa would be awesome. That's a great show.
I think there's a lot of personality there that
he's,
needs to be
excellent,
unleashed.
And he's got stories for days. And he was at our Inter Miami game at game three, texting me that he wanted my game worn jersey after the game. And I said, oh, okay, I'm gonna try to get you one, man. This is pretty important.
Did you get a jersey after that game?
I did. I traded with Busquets. So
Oh wow, decent.
Very proud of that.
Okay,
one.
Outside of Busquets, best jersey you have in your collection. Most cherished jersey. Doesn't have to be the best name. It could just be the most cherished.
Well, it's going to be obviously the Messi League's Cup jersey, which that's an obvious one. But okay, other than that, it's numerous jerseys. It's every Breck Shea jersey that I own. I'm so happy and proud of them. I've got Dallas. I've got Orlando. I've got Vancouver. I've got Atlanta. I've got them all. And he's one of my favorite guys of all time. And to be honest, let me go back, edit this in. He would be the perfect journeyman guest. Breck Shea.
That's a good one.
I can't believe I'm not.
There's some good stories in there.
I'm actually mad he hasn't come on the pod because I've told him numerous times that you are our coveted guest. So Breck Shea is my answer there.
There's a Birmingham story in there that I'd love to hear his perspective on. There's some early social media practices that we could talk about as well. Yeah. That's definitely a good one. Their best defensive midfielder in MLS history for you.
This is tough because what is Darlington? I don't know. I'm not considering him an out and out defensive midfielder. It's going to be a tie between Ozzie Alonso and Diego Chara. And then with a special shout out to Shalri Joseph.
I like the special shout out to Shalri. He's a little bit of a tweener too. Like he was and he wasn't. And then that somehow he played striker in Seattle
correct.
As well.
Correct. Correct.
All right. Your favorite moment from your career that is not quite done, but what is the one moment you look back on and you're like, that was so special to me.
Two moments. I'll give you other than I'm going to take out, the supporter shields and the trophies, cause those are really special moments. But, the most special moment in my career is not MLS related. It's national team related. I have 13 or 14 caps with the US men's national team. And only one of those caps was a World Cup qualifying cap. It was in Orlando, and obviously this was before Cuba, the game before Cuba. We had beaten Panama, I believe, 3-0 in Orlando. And I subbed on for Christian Pulisic, and I made my World Cup qualifying debut. And it was my only World Cup qualifying cap I ever had. And it was in Orlando in front of my friends and family. And in the hotel after the game, Dart McCarty, who is my father, he was overserved at the bar. And we were having drinks after, just soaking up the moment. And, you know, he just told me that he's proud of my whole career, but, you know, that moment was the most proud he's ever been of me in his life. And that I'll never forget that because there was a picture from that night as well that is just, you can just see in someone's face, in their eyes, you know, pride is difficult to assess in a picture, but you know, that moment for me was great. And it was one that I'll always keep with me. So a little bit of a different moment, not MLS related, because the supporter shields for me are at the top. Winning the first trophy ever for the Red Bulls will always be a top three moment for me. But that World Cup qualifying cap where I was with my family was at the top.
Family affair for the McCartys, and it is fitting that the next game, perhaps the last, you hope not the last, is going to be in Orlando as well. Orlando, Atlanta. MLS Cup Conference Semifinal Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Dax and the Five Stripes trying to pull off another upset. Dax, appreciate you, man. Everybody go listen to MLS Journeyman. It's a great pod. And yeah, appreciate your time, dude.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. We'll